Hello, iterative marketers. Welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast, where each week we give marketers and entrepreneurs actionable ideas, techniques, and examples to improve your marketing results. If you want notes and links to the resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. Now let's dive into the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Robinson, and with me, as always, is the relevant, always relevant, and sometimes on topic, Elizabeth Aaron. How are you doing today, Elizabeth?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
You're letting them into the inner workings of our meetings, where I bring up random stories all the time.
Yes, but it's always relevant, just not always on topic.
No, and entertaining, usually entertaining.
Yes. So I am in the throes of holiday gift selection and giving, which I have to say is generally not that big of a deal in our household for me because my wife Kim does a phenomenal job with it. But how about yourself?
I am one of those people who has their holiday shopping done early. I've been done for a few weeks now, minus we're doing a gift exchange with my parents over Christmas, and we haven't been given the name of our person yet. So that's the only gift I still have to buy. But otherwise, we are good. We are done.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm responsible for at least one white elephant gift. We've got two white elephant gift exchanges we participate in. And have you ever done one of those?
Yes, they're so much fun. I love white elephant gift exchanges.
So, that's kind of fun shopping, right? Because you get to come up with something completely off the wall and still, I think the rule is it has to be usable. So, it's good. I think one year we gave a whole big case of Sprecher soda that sounded like beer bottles clanking around. So everybody wanted it because they thought it was a case of beer, only to find out. Yeah, exactly. It's soda. So that was fun.
We have an awesome gift shop in downtown Coeur d'Alene, Something Monkey. I should know the name of it. Maybe it's the Brass Monkey. Anyway, they've got these phenomenal gifts that are fun and quirky, but you never really can feel like you can give them to someone, and then they're just perfect for white elephant gift exchanges. So
Excellent. So if we're not talking about white elephant, what are we actually talking about today?
Today is the third episode in a, I believe, four-part series that talks about content marketing in our different journey states. And the last few weeks, we've gone over see and think, and today we are exploring content marketing for the do state.
So for those of you that are paying attention to episode numbers, episode 36 was see, and episode 37 was think, which makes us 38, right?
Correct.
Excellent. Yeah, in the past two episodes, we really structured things based on the peso model. But when you get to do state, peso sort of breaks down, particularly in B2B organizations, because the audience is too small. So you can't use the same channels to reach them. So for a change of pace, we're going to break things down based on how we... different types of businesses and how those businesses would engage with content for the do state.
So we'll take a look at what the objective is for content in the do state. And then, as Steve said, we're going to take a look at what that do state content looks like in a variety of different markets. So if we don't address yours, send us an email. We'd love to talk more about it. And then for each of those scenarios we outline, we're also going to talk about how we measure success and how we iterate on it.
Now, before we jump into the why behind content in the do state, I think it's important to take a quick step back and look at how things have changed in the last few years in relation to content marketing in general, because I think it really comes to a head when we hit do. And in my mind, it comes down to the fact that people just don't like talking to each other like they used to.
No, things have changed. We honestly, and this may sound bad, but we don't have to talk to each other. You know, we've got Google at our disposal to be able to search for when we want. I have my smartphone with me all of the time, so I can even be in the store and wanting to do research, or standing at the car lot wanting to do research. And it's just sort of how our society has, what we have become as a society.
And there's some expectation of being able to communicate on your own time too. I mean, Facebook is a great platform for social communications where you can jump in and out when you have the time and want to make the time. And the same thing is true of text messages. We jump in and out of conversations when it's convenient to us. And so when we look at that in the context of a commercial transaction, now we as consumers don't want to have to be having conversations with a salesperson in real time. We don't want to have to go to the store and talk to people on their time. We don't want to have to talk to a salesperson in the context of a business transaction. We would rather be able to do what we want to do when we want to do it. As consumers, we want to be in control, and that's only really possible through content, right?
Exactly. Now, you, before we started recording, you had shared a really interesting statistic with me that, you know, sales is having a hard time reaching people because of this sort of change in behavior. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah. I mean, you look at sales organizations are having a significantly harder time conducting business than they used to. A recent study said that it's now down to up to 18 dials just to reach someone, and fewer than a 1% response rate on telephone prospecting. And I know that we're seeing this with our clients and shifts towards inbound models because outbound sales has become harder.
Well, even when sales does reach the person, to your point earlier, we're self-educating. And so what have they self-educated with? Is it correct information about our brand? Is it incorrect information about our brand? Or have they been getting information from one of our competitors and we're not even on their list anymore? So it's really changed the dynamic. And to your point, like you said earlier, it's made due content so important as we move through the buyer's journey.
Yeah, because the consumer wants to be in control. And the only way they can really be in control is if they have the tools and the information to be in control, right? Otherwise, they're flying blind. And we will shop, we will engage in business in places where we feel like we're more in control, where we have those tools, where we have those resources, whether they're being provided by a third party in the form of a formal write-up or review, or like a consumer reports, or whether it's peer reviews, or whether it's the tools and the guidance provided by the brand.
Well, and it comes back to what you talk about all the time. You know, you want to do business with brands you know, like, and trust. And again, whether that content's coming from you or coming from a third party, that's helping to you know, build that trust, create that trust, and it makes you feel better about your purchase.
Yeah. So how does content play into due state then? What are our goals as we introduce content to the consumer at their due state?
So I think it's you know, what we just talked about. It's providing that utility and really greasing the skids through the purchase process so that the consumer feels comfortable and feels knowledgeable enough about the purchase and engaged with the purchase that they want to move forward with it.
Yeah, and unlike see and think content, where we have to be careful how commercial the message is, we don't want to be at all salesy. This is sales content because it's helping that person understand, feel comfortable, and feel in control as they complete that sale. So it's inherently very commercial. It includes prices, it includes features and benefits, it includes details and comparisons and stuff that would come off as very salesy if you introduced them very early in the buyer's journey.
And not only that, but the customer wants it at this point. I mean, they have made the decision to make a purchase. And so before, where we were trying so hard to not come off as salesy, they actually want you to be salesy at this point because they're ready to move forward. So now is when we get to talk about all of those things that, you know, we wanted to talk about before, but we know that they weren't ready to listen to.
Yeah, it is important to understand that when we say salesy, we don't mean promotions or act now or buy now or coupons or anything like that. That's all direct response marketing. That's not what we're talking about in terms of content marketing. We're talking about content that adds value to the buyer as they're completing that buying purchase, not outbound pushy sales messages getting people to act. That's a different type of advertising or marketing.
Well, and a lot of times, it's justifying the purchase, whether it's justifying the purchase to yourself or you've already made up your mind, but now you need to get your spouse on board. You need to make sure that they're on board with this decision as well, so that you lead a happy life after the purchase mm-hmm. is made.
Well, and that's the same is true in business, right? Mm-hmm. When we're making a business buying decision, it often has to be circulated, or we have to make sure that we have our ducks in a row should somebody come back and question it later and say, why did you buy this? Well, here's the case studies and the sell sheets and everything that said this was a good purchase.
So what exactly does due state content look like?
It really depends on the business you're in. So I think the best way forward here is for us to break down a couple of different types of business organizations, really at that purchase point, and talk about how content plays a role for those different types of businesses. The first one that comes to mind, the most obvious one to me, although we do a lot of work in B2B, so that's probably why, is when you start talking about B2B with a sales force, because there, oftentimes a lot of your content marketing sort of shuts off at the point where the customer or the prospect hits due, because you don't want to be providing the wrong information for the buyer in that particular instance. And if it's a complex enough sale to require a salesperson, chances are there's a variety of different ways that salesperson can go and different pieces of information for them to provide. So at this point, we hand the content delivery off from something like a marketing automation system over to a salesperson to deliver that content.
So this is going to be things like pricing guides, onboarding processes, product configurators. Is that a word? Did we make that up?
Possibly, not sure. But that's all right.
But at the end of the day, these are things that are going to be offering utility and ease that process. Again, help make that, reinforce that buying decision that the choice you're making is the right one.
And sometimes this is content that is provided to your, the sales contact, probably the decision maker, but stuff they can use to circulate within the office. So sometimes they are sponsoring a project. They need to get buy-in from their boss or other stakeholders within the organization. A lot of due state content in your more complex B2B sales is really, really content that you can hand off to somebody inside the organization to go and make that sale for you to everybody else.
That's a really great point, I think, because when we create content, we always want to create it with a specific end user in mind. But we have to realize that when we get to due state, we don't necessarily always know who is going to be the recipient of what it is that we're mailing. It's not just or emailing. It's not just that it's going to who our contact is, but it may be going to the purchasing department. It may be going to, someone in the C-suite. There's a whole range of people that could be touching this document. So something to keep in mind as we work on that collateral.
Yeah, and that's where having your personas buttoned up, having your customer journey clearly documented, and definitely involving the sales team in that process. Because as a marketer, we're really not privy to what goes on at that point in the sales process behind the closed doors of our prospects, whereas sales has some insight into how things get shopped around within the prospect's business.
I can't tell you how many times we've been in a customer journey discovery meeting and something the sales team has introduced a role or a persona that I never even would have imagined was part of the purchase process. And then they explain it. It's like, of course, you can't make the decision without this person. So, you're right. Having sales be part of this discussion is key.
So how do we measure this content? Because it is being hand delivered. I mean, what's the opportunities for measurement?
Yeah. So it's a little complicated here because, if you think about a PDF that you're emailing them, a pricing sheet, you have no way to know, once that initial email is sent, who that's being shared with, whether it's being forwarded, whether it's being, I've worked in corporate worlds before. It gets printed out and literally handed, around the office. That does happen. There's no way to track that.
Yeah. And so it can be really tricky to do that measurement and optimization. There are some things you can do, though, to help give you a little bit of insight into this. First of all, if you can, make your templates available via the CRM system or the marketing automation system that you're using. So if you're using something like a Marketo or a Pardot, it's easy to publish those templates and push them through to the salespeople. So now they're using consistent copy. They're tweaking it for each send, but it's starting with a consistent boilerplate and a consistent subject line. And ideally, you're linking off to that content rather than attaching it. So now you can track engagement with those links to know which pieces of content are being used versus which ones are not.
Yeah, and when you're using tools like that, tools that let you track engagement on sales emails, you know, you've got, you know, Marketo Sales Insight, Pardot's Salesforce integration, they both let you send and track emails from within Salesforce. I know on the Marketo side, there's a number of Sales Insight reports that offer some really great insights that you may not have otherwise.
There are also tools, if you've got more of a field sales organization, there are tools that let you arm that field sales organization with electronic resources right there on like an iPad or a laptop. And many of those tools spit out reports that nobody ever looks at, but it would be, it can be really insightful to go and take a look at which collateral that you're, you know, you're digitally loading up your salespeople with is actually getting used out in the field, because it may surprise you to find that some pieces are just not as useful as, well, sales made it sound like they would be 2 years ago when they said they really needed it, right?
And I think it's important to make sure that you're working with sales and really measuring the usage and engagement of that content and working with sales again to update what's not being used.
Yeah. And it's hard because the data isn't going to be flowing like you're not going to get a deluge of data here. It's going to be bits and pieces. And so it can be very hard to get signal within that because nothing's really going to be statistically significant. So you're going to really be working with a lot of anecdotal information from the sales team and trying to sift and parse that to understand where is this one salesperson's quirk? Where is this a general trend within the organization? Where is there really a gap in content that needs to be addressed? And that's a challenge. But having some of the hard data from the systems to go and look at, in addition to working with that sales team, is the best way to go about it.
So that's our B2B with a Salesforce. But when we take a look at B2B without a Salesforce, these organizations are out there and they exist and they feel like sometimes they don't get the love that they deserve. And so can we talk about them for a little bit and what their content looks like?
Sure. These are usually SaaS companies, software as a service companies. And the internet has given the ability for B2B companies to now not even require a Salesforce in some cases. Slack is a great example. So Slack is a tool that was sold B2B for several years without any sales presence. And today they still have a very small sales force. And I think that's only because they some investors required that they find some more sales channels to continue their growth. Otherwise, they could probably continue for indefinitely without a sales team. But when you hit that no sales team to deliver the content, it means you need to be providing probably even more due state content out on your site for your buyers to engage in and feel like they're in control and feel like they're informed and make that buying decision.
So similar to our B2B with a Salesforce, this type of content is going to be things like adoption guides, pricing comparisons, onboarding price processes, anything that someone who is getting ready to make this purchase is potentially looking for. Either to reinforce the decision they've already made or try and figure out kind of what this is going to look like if they were to move forward, because they want to feel comfortable with the decision that they're making. And again, because you don't have that sales force, this is primarily going to be self-service content.
The nice thing about it being self-service content, though, is that it's highly measurable. You have the ability to easily track which content's getting downloaded, which pages are being read, which pages are being scrolled down, which onboarding videos are people actually watching before they buy. And chances are the purchase decision is also online. And so applying an attribution model is relatively straightforward too. Now, are you going to have that deluge of data in order to be able to know with statistical significance that, you know, these three videos are what really help somebody understand and feel confident to buy? Probably not. You're going to be pushing it on how long you need to be gathering data in order to be able to get something that has any meaning. And in some cases, you're just going to know on the edges when something is truly useless or a flop versus when something provided some utility to somebody. But some information is better than nothing when you're going through and attempting to iterate and improve.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is a great place for us to take a quick break. So without further ado, let's go help some people.
Before we continue, I'd like to take a quick moment to ask you iterative marketers a small but meaningful favor and ask that you give a few dollars to a charity that's important to one of our own. This week's charitable cause was sent in by an anonymous listener. This listener asks that you make a contribution to the Ocean Conservatory, an organization working in the Gulf of Mexico to secure a sustainable future for the region by helping to fight against coastal erosion, overfishing, and population, which are threatening wildlife and the people who depend on a healthy Gulf to survive. Learn more at oceanconservancy.org or visit the link in the show notes. If you would like to submit your cause for consideration for our next podcast, please visit iterativemarketing.net/podcast and click the Share a Cause button. We love sharing causes that are important to you.
And we're back. So before the break, we talked a lot about due state content, why it's important and how it's different from other states. We talked about what our goals are with due state content and what isn't content marketing. And we talked about B2B. Now I think it's a good time for us to break into B2C.
We've got a lot of marketers out there that are listening to the podcast who this is their target market. They are consumers. And we've split this into two areas, what we call the considered purchase, and then kind of what we call everything else. Do you want to talk about considered purchase?
Everything else. Sure, sure. So considered purchase, these are consumer purchases that look a little bit more like a B2B purchase in that generally there's a longer buying cycle and there are multiple stakeholders within the household. So these are things like when you go to buy a car or when you go to buy a washer and dryer, or even when you're making healthcare buying decisions. They're not things that you're going to do on a whim. They're not things decisions that you're going to make without involving a spouse in many cases. And so they're longer sales cycles. And here, everything looks a lot like B2B. The big difference is your audience is a lot bigger because everybody needs a washer and not everybody needs a car, but a lot of people need cars. Everybody needs healthcare. So your audience is going to be a lot bigger for these purchases, meaning that now your mediums for your content are going to change.
And because of that larger audience, there's a very good chance that the due state content, what consumers are looking for to make this decision, doesn't actually belong to you. So some great examples of this are consumer reports, Angie's Lists. These are all third-party or consumer reviews that people are using to, again, help reinforce that purchasing decision.
Not all of that content is in other people's hands, though. I think a really great example is if you go out to Ford.com, they have an entire section of their site labeled shopping tools, which includes product literature and that sort of stuff that you'd get if you were in a showroom. But it also includes tools like what is your trade-in worth? So you know that before you walk into the showroom, and other things that you wouldn't be doing if you weren't in that due state.
So when we get to measurement and iteration, here we have a bit of a challenge in that the purchase is often occurring offline while the engagement in the content is occurring online. And so we really are challenged to try and figure out which pieces of the due content were part of that journey. Do you want to explain that a little bit more?
Sure. So if you think about your process when you go to purchase a washer or dryer, you're going to spend some time online taking a look at consumer reviews on various sites. Maybe you'll find a blogger that wrote up a really great write-up on comparing a couple of models you were looking at. Maybe you go to the manufacturer's website and take a look at the detailed content there, and you've figured out which one you're going to buy. You've got your spouse's approval, and then you go to the store and you make that purchase. That purchase at the store has no way of being tied back to all of your browsing history online, right? It's not like you're going to buy a washer and dryer online. Some people do, but most people are going to go down to a store, take a look at the product, feel the knobs and make sure that it has exactly the features that they're looking for and the thing isn't ugly as sin and go from that route. So it becomes two completely different things. As a marketer, we want to know which of those research activities, particularly the due state ones, contributed to that purchase. But today, It's really hard to connect those dots. There are a few companies that are trying to take that offline behavior and tie it back to a purchase, usually tying it to a credit card or some other data. But that technology is still early, and it's expensive, and it's not the most reliable.
In the meantime, that doesn't mean that you can't get answers. It just requires a little bit more work. So one way that you can do that is surveying your buyers after the purchase to find out what they found most helpful when they were making that decision. That can be a very effective way to learn what's working and maybe where there may be opportunities to create new content that can better assist buyers in the future.
Yeah, if you create this whiz bang tool and nobody's using it, it means that it's not all that helpful or they don't know about it. And that's an opportunity to iterate and improve upon that buyer's journey. What about other B2C? What are we looking at there? The non-considered purchase, the inconsiderate purchase? I don't know.
I don't know if it's inconsiderate, but these are going to be those split second decisions that you're making. A lot of times this is focused on consumer packaged goods like toothpaste. For example, I'm not going to sit necessarily and reference blog posts as I stand in line at Target trying to figure out what to buy. I'm going to go to brush my teeth in the morning and realize I cannot squeeze another drop out of here and I've got to go to the store before bedtime tonight so I can brush my teeth again. And my decision is going to be from when I realize I ran out of toothpaste until I pick that product off the shelf. And sometimes it's not even that long. Sometimes it's just when I look at my list again and realize that it's there. So this presents an interesting sort of conundrum for marketers, because our due content has to be where the customer is shopping, because that's really the only time that they're thinking about this actual purchase. And here, space and time are both very limited.
Yeah. So examples, in an e-commerce context, this is the landing page copy that you've written. If you look at physical purchases, restaurants or stores, retail, you know, this is your signage. This is your packaging. So it's small little bit of space, not a ton of copy you can put on there. And quite frankly, the consumer isn't going to take a whole lot of time to read it either. So it becomes key to make sure that you're packaging it concisely. I'm sorry, I can't remember words today. Concisely and taking advantage of what little influence you have.
Yeah, it kind of forces us as marketers to rethink the concept of content marketing in that specific application and think, what space do I have to market to these people, and taking advantage of all of those opportunities, like you said, whether it's packaging, whether it's signage, sort of different elements that you can put out there that can spark their attention in that very short time span when they're making that decision.
Quite frankly, this becomes really hard to measure and really hard to iterate on. And it's an area that I think I don't know that we've done a ton of work in. And it really is a hard nut to crack.
I think when we're talking on the, we're talking about e-commerce and on the landing page side, you know, we've got some of those original, those digital pieces in there that we can definitely iterate on and we can measure and we can run tests, but that's a little bit harder when you get into your actual point of sale position within the store. So
physical good
type exactly stuff. Yeah. Exactly, but it doesn't mean that it can't be done. You just have to think a little bit more outside the box to make it happen, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
So we talked about business to business, we talked about consumer goods. What about our nonprofit friends?
Yeah, nonprofit is always its little own unique being out there and often gets overlooked. But it's very important to take into consideration your due state when you're marketing good, right?
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because when you're talking about nonprofits, in a lot of cases you may have multiple due state messages. You may have your small donors versus your large corporate donors versus people who you're asking to volunteer their time, whether that donation is a monetary donation or a physical goods donation. There's a lot of different ways that people can help. And so you want to make sure that you've got the appropriate message for the appropriate audience.
In this case, usually your due state content is the content that accompanies the ask itself. So whether that's, again, asking for time or money or goods, you're going to want to provide some content to put that donor or that volunteer in that driver's seat in control. And usually it's going to be connecting the dots between their actions or their money and the good that you're going to accomplish with it.
Here, measurement and iteration is possible, and we kind of jump back to some of what we've talked about before in terms of A/B testing. This works both for our electronic messages, but also if we've got printed content that we're delivering. It's very easy to print two different versions and test those against each other to see if one solicits more donations than the other.
And if you're doing it electronically, the same rules apply to coming back to the B2B with the salesperson. Instead of a salesperson, you have a development person, or you have a volunteer coordinator. And in this case, you're going to want to make sure that you avoid using PDF attachments because they're not trackable. You're going to want to give consistent templates so that you can split test your different templates to see which ones result in more engagement. And you can track downloads to see which downloads are getting used, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so I think that wraps up every scenario. I can't think of anyone that we've left off for this episode.
I'm sure we have. You can let us know. Email us at podcast@iterativemarketing.net.
So when we talk about due state content, we need to remember that it looks very different depending on what sort of organization that you specifically are marketing for or that you work for.
And how we measure and optimize is going to be very different for each scenario as well. And in often cases, you don't really have enough data to do it in a formal statistical way.
When you don't have the formal statistical way to do it, surveys of buyers can be very helpful in identifying what contributes to that actual purchase and what was just noise in the background.
So I think that's a wrap. I want to thank everybody again for your time today and encourage you, if you haven't already, pop out to iTunes and leave us a review, or wherever you're getting this podcast, pop out and leave us a review. We love the feedback, and it helps others find out more about iterative marketing. Until next week. Onward and upward.
If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast directory. If you want notes and links to resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There, you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our username is @ITER8IVE, or email us at podcast@iterativemarketing.net. The Iterative Marketing Podcast is a production of Brilliant Metrics, a consultancy helping brands and agencies rid the world of marketing waste. Our producer is Heather Ullman, with transcription assistance from Emily Bechtel. Our music is by Seastock Audio Music Production and Sound Design. You can check them out at seastockaudio.com. We'll see you next week. Until then, onward and upward.